Welcome to Break the Bias, a podcast series hosted by Jessica Cook and myself, Carmel Levine from So Perth. We tapped into this year's International Women's Day theme and we're taking the opportunity to speak to some amazing Perth women. Today, we're talking to Jennifer McMahon. Jennifer is co-founder and chief purpose officer at Modern People Global, a social enterprise helping organizations live true to their purpose and values every day, encompassing the mind, heart, and soul. Their mission is to show leaders how to be better people by doing great things in the world using purpose, culture, and impact. Jennifer, welcome. Start off by telling us a bit about yourself and your journey.
Wow, big question, straight into it. Firstly, thanks so much for having me here today. It really is quite an honour, you know, and you're both very bright and I feel like this is going to be a very natural and authentic conversation, so thank you. Okay. Oh, gosh, my journey. Well, hang on. How long have we got?
From when you were born.
All right. Yeah. Let's just chunk it down. Well, I guess for me, I've always had this sense of knowing that there is a greater impact or a greater difference that I can make in the world. And almost that sort of unsettling feeling from, you know, when I was a child, even now I still have it now of like, oh, you know, but there's so much more we can be doing. You know, like that restless feeling of it's never quite enough. And truthfully, that's my life battle. You know, that's my life mission is to work through that because while that's a great thing to have with drive and motivation, it can also be quite a damaging thing to oneself, one's soul. And so I'm forever looking for that harmony between that. And I guess that's reflected in the roles that I've taken. You know, my background, I studied marketing communications, then went on and studied human resources, went into the consulting world in a human resources and recruitment and executive search firm, loved it, really enjoyed it, then went on and developed that to be more executive advisory, coaching, corporate wellness, and then sort of felt that on that journey with that company that I had, there was a loss of connection to my own purpose. I was always a person that would just jump out of bed and just absolutely love what I did. I couldn't wait to get to the office. I couldn't wait to get out and meet my clients. You know, we were consulting to some of the most successful entrepreneurs of that time. You know, I had that company for 14 years and this was the mining and resources boom. You know, everything was happening and really just absolutely loved it and was energized by it. But after about 10 years of being on that corporate wheel and that constant chase, that chase for a high return, higher gross profit margins, more contracts, more tenders, more awards, started to lose my own soul. And back in 2010, I started suffering from anxiety. And I will never forget a defining moment. One of our clients was at the top of Exchange Tower, the ASX building, and went in to have a meeting with him. And I knew him really, really well. I had coffee with his wife. He'd asked me to come and sit down and talk to his kids who were in high school that were feeling a sense of loss of direction. You know, they didn't know what they wanted to do with their life. So that he was like, can you talk to my kids? And sure. And so I knew him really, really well. And I'll never forget, I was in the elevator going up and I started to have a panic attack. And I was like, oh my God, what is happening to me? You know, I was always such a confident person. I grew up in a male-dominated industry and I thrived in it. You know, my first mentor taught me at 23 to walk into a boardroom with men triple my age and have a voice and know that my voice meant something and to know what I stood for and to be true to that. And so for me, this was so foreign. And I sat in that boardroom and we went through the meeting and what really, really struck me was that I didn't feel safe to share how I was feeling with him. And this is a guy, we knew each other really well. We had a lot of banter, there was a lot of humour, there was a lot of, it was a great relationship. You know, we did a lot of work for this his whole company. And yet I felt ashamed to admit to him that I had a panic attack in the elevator. I felt ashamed because I felt that if I had said to him, this is what I'm going through, that they would never speak to us again. We would lose the contract. We would lose the business. That he would judge me and think, oh, God, well, I thought you were a strong, resilient woman and you're crumbling in front of me. My God, you know, we can't possibly work with you anymore. This was that imposter syndrome that was going through my mind. But at the time, I wasn't aware of what it was. I was just feeling the feels, but I didn't know. I didn't know how to intellectualize it. And so then I went on a healing journey in 2010. And back then, you know, there was Tony Robbins, you know, he's great, he's inspirational, but really kind of not my vibe, a little intense for me. yeah, guys can relate. Yeah. And then
slightly intense.
And then I was like, but that's cool, you know, like he works for some and that's cool, but just not for me. Went into a Landmark forum, kind of got the same feels, but just in person. So I was like, oh shit, where's the nearest exit door? Can I swear on this?
Yeah.
and then I was like, okay, what am I going to do? So I got myself a coach over in the US. And at the time, he was teaching high performance and what it meant. And what I thought was the answer to, or the ingredients for high performance, was actually very different. Mm-hmm. Because back then, high performing teams, it was that strength and resilience. If you don't stop, you keep pushing through, you just keep, you never, never give up, and you never admit to failure, and you just continue at all costs, where in actual fact, purpose and meaning and having a greater sense of something beyond you. So really letting go to your higher self and to the energy around you and that there is a spiritual world, whether or not it's not about religion, but it's about believing in the energy of the universe or source or where we all came from, and just surrendering to that, that actually was the answer. And so then I started studying spirituality. I started practicing more yoga. You know, before that I used to do yoga. I did yoga since I was 20, but I did it for exercise. You know, I wanted to go to the vinyasa yoga. It had the Bikram, because I was like, right, you know, I got to burn calories, got to burn energy, got to do this, I got to get my sweat on. Whereas in actual fact, the true foundation to yoga is that release, that letting go and releasing yourself. And so then I started immersing myself, and I just became like a curious little kid again, where I just wanted to learn everything. I was reading books, listening to podcasts. I just wanted to know everything about the world. I wanted to know about Mother Earth. I wanted to know about commercial enterprise. I wanted to know about companies that were doing really great things but that were making a really big profit. I wanted to learn about the different layers of consciousness. I wanted to learn about energy medicine and our layers of the meridians and the chakras, and I wanted to know how they all integrated. And I just became this like maniac for learning. And you know what? Nothing's really changed.
Still the same.
I'm still like, I'm just thinking about the audiobook I'm listening to right now, Brené Brown's latest, Atlas of the Heart. It's incredible. But I'm also reading The Four Agreements by Ruiz, one of the great philosophers. And I'm also reading an archetype book as well. So I'm kind of like, and listening to Brené's podcast and Simon's podcast. So it's kind of like, it's all just happening at the same time. And then, you know, then there's work and being a mom and all that sort of stuff on top of it, you know.
It's just, you know, casual, just relaxing. Casual. Yeah.
So I guess that's sort of where it all began. And then I guess then the evolution was that leaving that consulting firm and starting Modern People was really a pinnacle point in my life, because in that previous firm, that consulting firm that we had, I had a business partner and she was an extraordinary mentor for the journey of my career. But then really, when it came down to it, valued money above all else and profitability and commerciality above all else. And so I had to make that decision at that time that if I was living true to myself, my authentic self, and I was inspiring entrepreneurs and business owners and others to really live true to their purpose and live by their values, that I had to do it myself. And so I walked away from a hugely financially successful business to start Modern People with not a cent. You know, I had to go into my savings to pay for our website and our branding and a lease office space and just start from scratch with nothing and almost create our entire industry, because there was no industry for purpose, culture, impact consultancy, because it's like, well, what the hell is that? You know, why? Is that the same as what Deloitte and KPMG do? Oh no, it's not quite, is it? Oh, okay. And they couldn't put you in a box, so we had to create something from scratch. So that's how, and I guess a little bit about how it started.
And so tell us about that box that you created, like modern people, what is it that you do?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're still learning and it's ever evolving, because in purpose and culture and impact, it's so broad, right? There's many layers to it. I guess ultimately what we do is we work with leaders of organisations or leaders within small to medium business. We help them to be better. So we empower them to find fulfillment in their life, because it starts with your life looking at it from a holistic view, because how you find fulfillment in life is what you will choose to do in your work. And that is also then how you go and make a difference in the world. And, you know, our purpose, we help leaders to be better by doing great things in the world. You can never be the greatest. You can never be the best. You can always be better. You know, we can always be more present in who we are. We can always be more kind. We can always respect ourselves more. We can respect each other more. We can respect the world around us more. There's always ways that we can be better. It doesn't mean that if we have the highest market share or we have the most amount of followers or we have and then all of a sudden we're the best and we're the greater and gosh, I don't need to improve or learn anything more. We can always be better. And so I think that's why that really speaks to us, because when we go and work with organisations, one of our behaviours with our core values and beliefs is we meet you where you are. So, you know, if you're curious about what purpose is, or you perhaps have a purpose statement but you don't feel that it's really being lived, or you've got a set of great values but you don't really feel like that your team or your business or your clients even know what they are, or they don't embody them, or they don't reflect on them regularly, it's not part of the everyday, then we can come and help and work with you to bring it to life. Our core belief is that, you know, there's doesn't need to be this dichotomous view of, well, you're either a really successful commercial business like the traditional VC firms and the financial institutions who it's just profitability and money at all costs, or you are a not-for-profit or a purpose-for-profit or a social enterprise, and so, you know, you do everything for love and that you don't look at your profitability or bottom line. You know, we don't believe in that dichotomous view. We believe that in the middle is this beautiful place where purpose-led organisations are commercially successful, their people are energized and focused, their people know that they matter and they're making a difference, and their leaders are supporting them and helping them and guiding them to grow and to be better. And that's ultimately what we do with all organizations.
Yeah, and I feel like especially in, you know, the present time, I think a lot of people want to be in a job they're passionate about, and they won't settle for a job where they're not valued or they're not. So I think coming into it for you, that's kind of a perfect time, because you've got all these people, they want to be heard, they want to, you know, live with purpose, as you say. So it's I think it's just great that you've kind of grabbed onto that and you're doing something, you know, so businesses aren't just work, and
that's exactly,
you know, you go to work, you come home. I don't think that's the days we live in now.
No,
work kind of becomes our life. In a good sense, if you're passionate.
That's it. Yeah. We've evolved from that 9 to 5, and that, you know, I'm just working to live. You know, it's a struggle, and we need to respect and honour that's the world that we came from. You know, and not judge or shun those traditions, because generationally, those generations before us were the ones that have paved the way and made this possible for us to be able to live in this way and be able to bring meaning into work. And the research reflects it as well. I mean, the World Happiness Report, it's released every single year. And have you guys seen it before?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So
there's usually one at the top.
It's like a Scandinavian
there?
Country.
Yes.
There's usually one always in number one, isn't it?
Yeah. And what's so interesting is that they've been living their purpose and meaningful work. And I guess, you know, we're talking about a completely different social construct, a different political construct. So, you know, it's not about comparing, but it's about taking, well, you know, what life do they choose to lead, and how do they, what do they do? You know, how do they create the space for everybody, you know, gender aside, generation aside, how do they create that space? And they are true egalitarian cultures. And one would argue that, yeah, Australia is like that. We're really multicultural, but there's still hierarchical systems in place and traditional ways of working and traditional leadership styles that exist in the current day, in corporate and in small business even, that we still need to break down that stigma and still need to break down those barriers before we can aspire to be a true egalitarian culture like Norway. Mm. And I guess, you know, the World Happiness Report, it says, you know, that the number one factor to happiness is meaningful work. You know, even before connection and family relationships, even before good health and well-being. Because what they found in the report was that if you have good health and well-being, that you take it for granted because it's a given, right? It's like, yeah, I'm healthy. I'm you know, yeah, sure. You know, I did a bit of exercise and, you know, I don't really get sick. I haven't had a cold in 10 years. So, you know, my immune system's pretty robust. And so but it doesn't mean that they are happy. Mm. It doesn't mean that they have meaning in life until they can actually have that and then have meaningful work. They don't really feel they're happy. And so the younger generations now, Generation Z and some of the younger millennials, like you say, it's a 101, right? You're going to work. It's like, well, what are you doing about your carbon footprint? And, you know, what is it and what are you doing about it? Or how are you helping to solve some of the sustainable development goals? Like, it's just a question that's just asked in casual conversation. And if the leaders can't answer that, and there's still many leaders that can't, that, well, it's just a no-brainer. It's like, why would I work here?
Mm-hmm. So how does diversity and gender equality fit into what you do?
Yeah, that's a really great question because it's kind of a fabric of everything that we do. I guess because we started in a different time, we don't have that legacy, that corporate legacy behind us in our business, but we certainly see it with the organisations, the companies that we work with around the world. And I guess, you know, for us, it's that gender equality, and gender equality is one of the SDGs that we work towards. It's around partnering with the organisations that we're with to really bring that purpose and your values or your principles, bring them to life. Because when your purpose statement transcends humanity, transcends this lifetime, transcends in, and when your vision statement aligns with the SDGs, gender equality comes naturally. It's not something that you need to have a target for, and you need to. And I understand that in traditional business, and certainly a lot of the resources type organisations or traditional financial institutions, corporate services management consulting, there is, you know, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years of ingrained unconscious bias there that needs to be unlearned before we can rewire and relearn. And so then, yes, there are quotas that need to be put in place because you've got to start somewhere. And if you don't start there, well, then you'll never start. And so there is so much value in that, I guess, in what we do. When we partner with organisations, we really look and we benchmark their values and their behaviours so that there is a value and behaviours around putting your people first, around your purpose and greater contribution to humanity, around your planetary, your environmental sustainability impact initiatives, and also on your profitability, on your commerciality. And so when you have values and behaviours around that, you actually don't need quotas, targets, you don't need even KPIs and OKRs. You know, like, that is also a thing of the past. It's because you will reflect on your behaviours, and your performance reviews or your annual reviews, biannual reviews, will be based around those behaviours. And so it happens organically. It doesn't need to be something that we have a quota in. But, you know, like anything, this takes time. You know, and we're having to go back and unlearn and unwind a lot of deeply ingrained beliefs and unconscious behaviours, and that takes time.
Yeah, definitely.
And so what does break the bias mean to you? And can you tell us about some women who've inspired you?
Yeah. Breaking the bias to me is looking beyond just what we see. It's looking beyond what we hear. It's looking beyond our own sense of self and putting yourself in the emotional state and the perspective of humanity. It's about looking deep within yourself to what are those layers of your consciousness. So what is deeply ingrained in your unconscious behaviour, the choices that you make, the words that you say, you know, the Australian tradition, culture is very, there's a lot of humour in it. There's a lot of, you know, shit giving. There's a lot of banter and there's a lot of, but in that humour are some deeply ingrained biases. You know, it's that, that whole tall poppy syndrome of, oh gosh, yeah, we're going to bring him down a peg or two or bring her down a peg or two. And it's just, it's the social norm, right? We go out, we have a few drinks, we go to a party. It's like, yeah, you know, what the hell are you wearing? Like, you know, what were you like? And then it just goes straight into that shit giving. But in actual fact, what you're doing is you are further embedding those biases. You are further embedding a divisive and non-inclusive culture. It's in your social culture, in your friendship groups, and that translates then into meetings, into the workplace, because it's those water cooler conversations, all those how you start a meeting and you just have general chit chat, and really, you know, what you're doing is you're actually berating somebody else. And so, you know, there's when we talk about breaking the bias, we're talking about actually taking a hard look at yourself and going, man, you know, like, yeah, this is fun, and it brings me an instant hit of humour, an instant hit of dopamine, if we want to get technical. But really, is this actually living true to who I am? Because, you know, my heart and my soul cares about people, and I don't ever want to leave anyone out. So why would I berate someone when they walk into the room because of my own quick sense of, and it's the ego that drives that. You know, it's the ego that wants that gratification in the moment. But breaking the bias means is actually doing some work, like taking a look at yourself and going, yeah, you know what? Like, shit, that is the ugly person that shows up every now and again. That's the monkey on my shoulder, or that's my shadow self or my dark side or however you want to put it. But going, yeah, you know what? Like, we all need to grow and evolve. And there are some behaviors that I have that I kind of need to look at and go, yeah, you know what? That's not okay. And I guess back to the second part of that question, you know, some women that inspire me, like, I mean, I could give you like the standard answers that, you know, you'd probably get and go, yep, okay, well, you know, women like Amelia Earhart, who was brave enough to fly around the world, you know, solo.
No
by
one
herself,
said that yet.
No? Okay. Amazing.
You are, actually. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Or I could say like Maya Angelou, who's like, you know, my favourite.
Another new.
Another new one. Yep. Okay, right. But the truth is, if I wanted to break bias, I would talk about the people who inspire me. And truthfully, every day I'm inspired by so many different people who do exactly that, who break down those walls of judgment, of doubt, to really take a look at themselves and go, yeah, wow, that person that I show up with, that person who speaks in the meeting, that person who picks up the phone and makes those crass comments, that's not the person that I want to be. And I want to choose to be somebody different, because it's a choice, right? We can choose to just go, oh, you know what, like, who cares? Like, let's just continue doing what we're doing, and it's all a bit too hard, and, oh, God, it's just, like, more woo-woo stuff. Or we could, because, you know, the Australian culture as well, deeply ingrained in our culture, is like, we just want a good, easy life. Like, we just want to have fun. We just want to, like, live an easy life. We just want to. But then with that comes those moments of judgment, and comes with those moments of ridicule, and comes with people feeling like they don't belong, and people feeling like they don't matter because they're not part of the general population. Well, they think they're not, but in actual fact, what it is, it's our ego taking over. And so I would say that on a daily basis, I'm inspired so much by the men that actually stand up for women's equality. The men that stand up to say, you know what? Like, I'll share one story. Just recently, I chaired the Women in Leadership Summit here in Perth. And there was a panel, and, you know, we're talking, there's a room of 250 women. There was maybe 5 men in the entire room. And there was a particular panel that was up there, and 3 men on the panel. And one of them, who is a very well-respected leader within Western Australia, he stood up and said, you know, we now have unconscious bias training for every single new team member that joins our organisation. And he said, and I'll tell you why, because I am that stale pale male that you all talk of. I am that middle-aged, you know, man of privilege. He said, but I never grew up thinking I had privilege. You know, in my mind, I grew up thinking I worked really hard for what I had. You know, I've made it now to this senior position, but, you know, I wasn't gifted. I didn't come from a wealthy family. I didn't come from a privileged family. I had to work really hard to get where I've got, and I got opportunities handed to me, but I thought that I worked really hard to it. And then it wasn't until it was suggested that I go on this unconscious bias training. And I didn't really think I needed to, but I thought, well, you know, yeah, sure, I won't say no to anything if it's something new that I can learn. And he said, and at one of the points in the activity at the end, we had to draw a picture of who we saw ourselves after you'd gone through all of the activities of, okay, in a moment, you know, who would you choose? How do you select new team members? What is your process for promotion? How do you make the decisions on a daily basis? And he goes, and I ended up drawing, it was an art activity, drawing a picture of a really dark human being. He said, because I had no idea about that those opportunities were handed to me or given to me because I was a white male. I thought I worked really hard for them. And so I was very protective of where I had got to because I didn't know any different. And when I went through this training, it opened up my eyes to a whole nother way of being, of thinking, of seeing. And he said, and now it is just a no-brainer that everyone in this organization, because you just don't know what you don't know. And so somebody like that, who is brave enough to speak in front of a room full of 250 women and really share that he was that man that you all judge and you all, but you know what? We're all human. And that to me is everything, because it's not about gender. It's not about culture. It's not about sexual preference. It's not about any, it's about us as human beings. And we are all sharing the same human experience. And so they're the people that inspire me, those people who stand up and share their vulnerabilities. That was a really vulnerable moment for him. And, you know, he actually got a standing ovation from it. People had tears in their eyes because they were like, my God, how brave of you to say that. And in what a lot of people would coin as a male bashing conference.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the people who are inspiring you are the ones who are doing the work.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's important to point out too. You know, not we can talk about, you know, women who inspire us, but I think it's also important to talk about men like that in that story who, you know, have come forward and they've listened and they've, you know.
They've done the work.
Yeah.
They've done the work.
And then they've shared the story of how they're still doing the work.
They're still doing the work. Yeah. And how they're actually doing something about it. He could just say, well, I've done the work. Okay, great. Now okay, I'm tick. Aware. Yeah. But he's actually saying, no, okay, in my organisation, now every single person that joins part of your onboarding, you do unconscious bias training. Bang. Yeah. That's it. Doesn't matter where you've come from, what gender you are, we all do it together. So that people like that are actually making a conscious effort to break the bias.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're shifting their whole organizational culture by being leaders and setting an example and then pulling everyone along with them.
Mm.
Yeah, fabulous.
So for Modern People, you've chosen to focus on three sustainable development goals. You've based them off the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So I just wanted to know why those particular goals you've chosen and why those are important for businesses.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think, look, you know, all the 17 goals are hugely important, but also just being laser focused on the ones that are meaningful to you as an organisation are important. For us, good health and well-being is a fabric of everything that we do. We have just embedded it into our everyday. So it's not, we don't offer health and well-being programs on their own, but when we work with organisations, so for example, we start every strategy session, every coaching session, every identity session, every masterclass and learning session with either a visualization, breathing, meditation, some form of centering to bring you back into the present moment, to let go of any negative energy or doubts or fears so you can be fully present in the moment. And that's part of good health and well-being. We also, when we're working with organisations on their EVP model, so that's their employee value proposition, we also encourage them and we show them what great looks like in the industry of purpose-led organisations. So we show them what other organisations around the world are doing around health benefits, around well-being allowances and initiatives and days and weeks and, you know, that... bringing a massage therapist in, you know, once a month for a little activity might be tokenistic to some companies, but if you're doing that on a monthly basis and that is coupled with providing fresh fruit and then providing meditation and breathwork sessions and it's all encompassing, then that is your way of providing good health and well-being to your people. It's also the things that we probably, I mean, it's easy, those things are, let's call them the shiny health and well-being things, but you know, what about when someone comes to you and says that they're feeling a little drained, they're feeling exhausted, or they come to you crying because they're feeling quite emotional because there's just a lot going on in their life at the moment. So how are you supporting them through that? Because if they have a deadline due tomorrow, what do you do as a leader? Do you say, well, yeah, you know, like you give them the pep talk, like a coaching pep talk before we're about to go and play a game and say, yeah, come on, we've just got to get through this last little sprint. It's due tomorrow, you got to... Or do you actually honour the fact that they are mentally, physically and emotionally exhausted at the moment or overwhelmed, or maybe they're at a tipping point in their life, and do you have a structure in place to support them? You know, do you have counselling services, psychology services? Do you have a yoga or meditation person you can send them to? Do you have a counsellor that you can sit with? Or do you just coach them yourself? What do you actually do in those moments? Because that's true leadership. You know, you can have all the fruit bowls and all the massages that you like, and sure, they're great. But when it really matters and when the research shows, and we can see it in ourselves as well, it's when your team member comes to you and they're feeling burnt out and overwhelmed and they've got a massive deadline due and a client's waiting for it or a bank's waiting for it or something which has a direct financial impact on the business, what do you choose as a leader? And so that's what good health and well-being means to us. It's a fabric of every day, every life. Economic growth and decent work is another one, and that's part of within our consulting division. We also source individuals, we source executives and leaders for organisations we work with. When we go through our framework and go through our interview process, we ask what your values are. The profiling, we've created all our own profiling around purpose, values, change readiness, strengths. And so that profiling gives a really accurate picture baseline of who the individual really is. Not personality profiles, which, you know, we stopped using about 10 years ago because they can be quite limiting, you know, almost used as a crutch. It's like, well, I'm an introvert, so that's not really something I do. Yeah, no, that's not me. I'm never going to be the person that's really confident because I'm an introvert. But some of the most confident people on the planet are introverts. And so we've seen it being used as a crutch, as a way of not moving forward, not creating your future self. And so, you know, for us, that giving people that opportunity to connect into their true authentic self, so then they can go and attract that role, like we spoke about earlier, about real meaningful work, living your purpose and meaning. Well, you have to know who you are first, and you have to know what you believe before you can go out and attract that role or that company. And so we offer that platform for people to do that in any country. And economic growth, well, that comes from being purpose-led, you know, from an organisation point of view and from a growth strategy point of view. There's VC firms now that have a very, very clear directive on what their percentage of social and environmentally conscious companies that they want to, or green companies they call, that they want to invest in. But you can be green in the environmental and sustainability space, but you can also be green in your people first, in your social impact space, in your community impact space. And so that is that's the answer to growth in the future, economic growth in the future. It will come from purpose-led. Even the crypto world now, you know, a lot of the coins that are doing really well are the purpose-led coins. Mm-hmm. So there's a movement that will create economic growth. And then the partnership for the 17 goals. The partnerships is probably the biggest one because that is actually what we do. So our business model is to, when we work with organisations, we use the 17 goals as our baseline. It's like, okay, well, this is something because everybody knows who the United Nations is. Well, actually, surprisingly, there's a few companies that haven't heard of them. But they generally know who they are. So it's a great, almost a benchmark. An industry benchmark, particularly for a lot of the technical organisations we work with. So if they're a lot of engineers or a lot of scientists or heavy in that area, they want something which is internationally recognised. And so we use that as a benchmark to when we create the vision statement. Hey, you know, what is what goals are you aligned to? And then we help you to bring those to life with your impact initiatives.
Yeah, and so has there been a particular highlight moment for you where you've seen your impact on a business, or how do you kind of see that impact that you're making?
Yeah. It is, there's tangible ways, and then there's also the way that you feel and you see. And so because we are interacting, we're going into their offices or we're seeing them online weekly or monthly or on a regular rhythm. So in that rhythm, you can see the shifts, the mindset shifts, the energy shifts of individuals. Their people, they feel, because when they're sharing stories, and a lot of what we do, like how we actually can benchmark this and record this, is through the reflection sessions. So whether your rhythm is coming together weekly with your team or fortnightly or even daily, it's those interactions where you can feel that the energy shifts. People are having more meaningful conversations. People come and they're more energized. And so that you see almost immediately when you have breakthrough moments. But from a metric point of view, you can actually measure it around, so we are, we also support B Corp. B Corp, have you heard of Business for Good, B Corp? Corporation?
I don't think I have. I don't.
Amazing. So it's, I love sharing more about B Corp. So it's an internationally recognised certification, Business for Good. So Patagonia was one of the first B Corps, you know, in the world. Yeah. But you can be a one person sole trader, or you can be a multinational organisation like Patagonia and everything in between. And they're conscious businesses. So businesses who put their people first. There is five pillars within the B Corp journey, around your environmental and sustainability impact, around your people, so your own people internally, around your customers, your clients or stakeholders, around your supply chain, and around your corporate governance. And so with each of those pillars, organisations, it's a great way of measuring, you know, how are you living your purpose and values, and how are you accountable to your community impact, your environmental impact and your social impact, because we have to report on specific figures. So figures of, okay, how much of your profit or how much of your revenue have you dedicated to initiatives which align with your SDGs. So B Corp also aligns with the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So, you know, if gender equity is one of them, then how do you align with gender equity? How much actually of your profit or your revenue? And so a lot of companies do in-kind. So they'll say, well, we might not donate money, but we will, our team will once a month go and volunteer and give our time or give our services. We volunteer our team's services. This happens a lot in the digital space, where there's such a great, you're nodding, because you guys, I'm sure you guys probably do this, yeah?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So, but then that's quantifiable, right?
Yeah.
So then the directors actually have a figure, okay, well, that's salary that I paid. So I've paid, so that's how many team members you have. You work out, well, what does it cost me to employ those people for that one day?
Yeah.
That is direct cost into my impact initiatives. And so B Corp help you to articulate that and be accountable to what that means for the commerciality of your business as well.
Ah, yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's great. And I mean, it must be great for you to see you know, your whole purpose for this is obviously kind of what you've just described. It must be great for you to see businesses achieve that and kind of move forward with that sort of thing.
Exactly. You know, like as the masculine part of our brain, or the left side, the logical brain of us, it likes a number. It likes structure, and it likes frameworks, and it likes metrics and numbers and percentages. So we need to honour that, or speak to that side of who we are, to be able to measure the impact that we're actually making. That's one side of the thing. And then when you go to the right side of the brain, the creative brain, when you go to our feminine energy, that is about trusting and having faith. Mm. One of our favourite sayings from one of our board members, Zach, is a river flows to many places that the source never knows. And true purpose has that impact. It will flow and it will have an impact, and you will never see that impact. But the modern world that we live in, the corporate space, if we can just quantify a small part of that, know that that's the minimum impact we're having, but in actual fact, it's much greater than that, then that helps our logical mind sleep at night. But our creative mind, our feminine energy will say, yeah, but really, gosh, there is so much more that we are doing here. There's so much more impact. There's so many more lives we're changing. There's so many people we're saving. There's so many parts of the planet that we are preserving because of the greater impact, that ripple effect, or the flow of the river.
Hmm. Yeah, and it goes back to what you were saying about bringing it all together. You know, it's not black and white, kind of just having that. You can live with purpose and you can work with purpose, that kind of thing. So, yeah, all coming back around.
Oh, I love that connection. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. Yeah.
And so what is one, if you could give maybe say one thing that you've learned from working with some of Australia's most respected leaders, what would that be?
One thing. Probably that this life matters. And regardless of what you believe, you know, that you only have one life in this life, or whether you believe that you have many lives, this life that we have now, these opportunities only come once. It's an ancient Zen proverb in Japanese philosophy that opportunities present themselves once. But what you choose to do with that is up to you. And life is full of those opportunities. And what we choose to do with each one of those, that's up to us. And don't waste it, you know, because this life does matter. And we have an opportunity. Every single person is born on this planet to make a difference. But it's up to you to decide what is that difference in your life. You know, there's no... my daughter is only 3, but I find myself saying things like this to her. Like, I want her to start really believing this from such a young age. It's like, you know, my darling, like you are here and your life really matters. And what you choose to do in this moment, and, you know, she looks at me, she's 3, her cognitive development isn't there. But she's probably looking at me going, what are you saying?
This moment, I choose to eat Play-Doh.
I'm hungry. Yeah, I'm hungry. I'm going to pick up the dirt and I'm going to eat it totally. Yeah. But I do believe that she can feel the energy coming from me. And with time, when because her cognitive development will start before I'm conscious of it. And so the more that we teach our children, the more we teach our younger generations that your life really matters. And, you know, it doesn't mean that you can't have a good time and go out and have fun and just go crazy. I mean, wow, you know, I really did that in my youth. Yeah, that's their stories for another podcast.
That's another 2 hours.
not this one. But you know,
let's start that podcast. Yeah. Yes. It sounds good. Misspent youth.
But you know, and that's part of life, having that fun and that frivolity and that laughter. But just still don't lose yourself doing it. You know, you can do that. You can pull the all-nighters. You can go out. You can go do all of those things. But don't lose connection to who you really are and how important your life is. You know, there's always a tipping point in any of those choices or situations in life. And know who you are, know what you believe, and know the difference that you're here to make. And then go out and have a blast.
Mm. Well, yeah, that's so well said.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Wow, Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us. We've really appreciated you sharing your story about yourself and your business with our audience. So if people want to learn more about you and about Modern People, where can they do that?
Yeah, just jump on into our website. It's just modernpeople.com.au. That's the best place to go, and you can reach out through any of the contact us forms and reach out, or just look me up on LinkedIn. It's just Jennifer McMahon. Shoot me a message. Would love to hear from you. I'm always chatting to people. I love talking to people, you know, everywhere, all over the world. It's so much fun. When you realise you're actually talking to a real person, not a robot, then it's really cool. Yeah.
It's really exhilarating then. Yeah.
Then it's like, oh my God, I've got a real person. Yeah.
Well, we hope we've been real people and not robots. No. And thank you for being a real person and not a robot. So thank you so much for joining us. And best of luck with everything.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.